How many people have read the children's book, Frog and Toad Are Friends? Better yet, how many people have had that children's book read to them? Nothing better than having a children's book read to you. I want to read just a small section from this book. A frog is going to Toad's house. It's setting up this amazing year of friendship. Frog says, "What you see is the warm light of April, and it means that we can begin a whole new year together, Toad." "Think of it," said Frog. "We'll skip through the meadows and run through the woods and swim in the river. In the evening, we'll sit right here on this front porch and count the stars." Frog and Toad are the best of friends. The philosopher Aristotle wrote, "Without friendship, no one would choose to live, even if they had all other good things in life." Another author wrote, "Loneliness is the most desperate of all English words." One of the most authentic friendships that we can find in the Bible is in the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel. It's a friendship between two young men, Jonathan and David. It is a Frodo and Sam from the Lord of the Rings trilogy kind of friendship. And I am so excited for the Lord of the Rings Amazon series. Oh, I can't get enough of Tolkien's world. But Jonathan and David were real men who lived in real history, in real time. The story of Jonathan and David is an unlikely friendship. Jonathan was the son of the first king of Israel, Saul. He was the crown prince, but God had anointed a nobody, David, to become the next king. Despite this fact, Jonathan and David become true friends. Think of Bernie Sanders being best friends with Donald Trump, and you'll begin to understand how weird it was that Jonathan and David are actually great friends. These two men mirrored some of the truth that we see in wisdom literature of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes about friendship. Proverbs 18:24, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." That is a Jonathan and David type of friendship. And then Ecclesiastes 4:9-10, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up." Over and over again in the story, we discover that Jonathan and David help each other out in the deepest, darkest, most challenging seasons of their life. That's what an authentic friend does. Open your Bibles way to the left to the Old Testament book of Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 18. We're going to look at various aspects of this story, this friendship. 1 Samuel 18, 1-4. "After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit." That's an important phrase. Underline that. Highlight that in your Bible. "And he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt." One in spirit can more literally be translated, the soul of Jonathan was knit together with the soul of David. They were true kindred spirits, authentic blood brothers. They were, in fact, BFFs. This last week, I was on Facebook, And I was looking at my Facebook page, and I noticed that I was tagged in this picture of my high school class, and I have a particular reunion coming up. I can't believe it's been that many years. And my son, Spencer, was next to me, and he's like, well, where are you, Dad? And so I was looking throughout the picture to try to find where I was standing, and I noticed, to no surprise to myself, that I was standing next to Warren. Which makes sense because Warren was my BFF, my best friend in high school. Warren and I did everything together. We had all of these plastic weights that were filled with concrete, and we set them up in my garage, and we would crank the music on something called a boombox, and you can Google it if you don't know what that is. And we were lifting weights, and then we had a big mirror, and we had our tank tops on, usually pink in color, because that was cool back then, and we would just flex together because we were best friends. And we would hang out at the Jersey Shore and go to Seaside Heights. Yes, just like the show. And in the snow, we would go outside and build forts and have snowball fights. And we would stay up all night watching 80s action movies and eating New York-style garbage pizza. Best pizza in the world. Don't argue with me. Everything was on that pizza, and you could just fold it, and the grease would pour down, and we'd be watching these movies. We'd eat in the pizza and have huge bags of Doritos, and we would drink 2-liter bottles of Coke before you couldn't do that kind of thing. And it was so, man, we would talk about life and our future and where we were going to go to college, what we were going to do, and of course, girls, because he was my closest friend in high school. It was a Jonathan and David kind of relationship. The only comment that my son Spencer had as we were looking at the picture and I was talking about Warren was, what's up with those hairstyles, Dad? And we're praying that they never come back again. 80s hairstyles. What were we thinking? 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 42. Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left and Jonathan went back to the town. And then the last time that we see Jonathan and David interacting together is 1 Samuel 23, 16 through 17. And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Harash and helped him find strength in God. Don't be afraid, he said. My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this. What a unique friendship that Jonathan and David had. And over again, Jonathan is protecting David from his psychopathic, narcissistic father who wanted to eliminate the perceived threat of David. What is this thing called authentic friendships? It's interesting when you fast forward from the story of Jonathan and David to the New Testament and you look at the teaching of Jesus, there was a common debate that was going on in his day. All of the religious scholars and the Pharisees would argue about what is the greatest commandment. The Jewish people had hundreds and hundreds of commands. And they want to know if we could strip back all of the command, if we could only follow like one command, what was the one command that we should follow? And so Jesus, the genius teacher that he was, and Jesus was in fact a genius teacher, quotes the Bible that he read, which is our Old Testament. And Jesus says, the greatest commandment is to love God. Literally with every fiber of our being, with everything. We love God with our mind and our hearts. We love God with our emotions. We love God in the context of our relationships. We love God with our time and our gifts and our money. Like everything that we have is God. And that is the greatest commandment. But then Jesus, which he often did, turned the corner on the question they were asking about the greatest commandment. And he took another text in the Old Testament, his scriptures, and he says, well, if we love God, the second is connected to the first. In fact, you can't really do the first unless you also engage the second. And the second is that we love others. We love our neighbor, that we care for what God cares about the most. And what God cares about the most is human beings. God cares the most about us, about people. And so we can't say that we truly love God and we care about God if we don't love and care for the people around us, if we're not engaging community and relationships and friendships. So a Bible scholar who has a PhD in New Testament and Old Testament, in ancient languages, is not mature unless that scholar engages people, has real relationships. God has connected the need that we have for him and the need that we have for each other. If you weren't with us last week, we began to launch our Us series, and we talked about this idea, and you can watch the sermon online on our app, that God has created us with two holes, a hole for God, for Jesus, and a hole for community, and that both of these holes in us need to be filled, and so we are created for God, and we're created for each other, and if we love God, and if we're maturing in our relation with God, we have to be in relationship with others. It's not just about the information that I have. We can know a lot about God and a lot about the Bible, a lot of theology. We can win a Bible trivia game, but if we've isolated ourselves, we're actually immature. Maturity is loving God by loving others and caring for others and being in authentic relationships. But we have a challenge in our society because we live in a culture of isolation. We've been infected by individualism. And this infection began to spread throughout the U.S. in the 50s at the birth of something called the suburbs. You see, in the 50s, the suburbs emerged. And with the automobile in the suburbs, it allowed people to live in one place and then drive far away to another place to shop, or to work, or to go to church. And how we built our very society became a catalyst for a culture of isolation and individualism. On top of the birth of the suburbs and people having to drive everywhere, we began to see something called the garage door opener. And the garage door opener allowed us to drive from work or church or where we shop or far away where our family lives to our house. And we don't have to interact with our neighbors at all. Now, some of you love this. Not me with my neighbors if you're here. I love you. And you push a button and you can go into your garage and then the garage door goes behind you and you don't have to interact with human beings at all. And it's actually eroding away our very soul because we're created for community. See, before the 50s, houses tended to be built with large front porches very close to the road because everyone lived where they worked, where they went to church, where their family lived, and where they shopped. So you're sitting out in your big front porch and the road is right there. And I guess you're sucking down your lemonade and you would see your neighbors walking by. Going to work, going to church, shopping, and you could wave to them and you could chat with them. But now, how do we build homes? We have the big space, not in the front near the road. Where? In the back, fenced off. So we don't have to be around people. So we don't have to interact with people. So the very way in which we've designed our society doesn't promote how God has wired us and our need for each other and community and friendships and relationships. Well, architects are beginning to understand this, and we're seeing now apartment complexes in the suburbs where people can live next to each other and they can shop and they can eat and even closer to some business parks where they can work. Because you and I need each other. Of course, then we have streaming media. So think about this for a moment. Our homes, our garage door openers, our streaming media, and then our various services in which we get stuff delivered to our house. All of this means we never have to interact with another human being again. And again, some of you are like, yes, that is so beautiful. I can have my books delivered. I can have my groceries delivered. I can have my dog food delivered. Everything can come to the front door. I can sit and I can stream all of my music and I can watch all of my shows and our movie. Like, I never have to interact with anyone. And it's killing us because we're created for each other. We're created for us. We're created for friendship. One of the reasons why shows like Seinfeld and Friends and The Office are still so popular and watched and rewatched on streaming services is because the makeup of the shows. Like Seinfeld, which is really old, you can Google if you don't know what I'm talking about, has people living in close proximity. They're in a city together. They're interacting together. And Friends, it's the same idea. And The Office, even though they live in different places, most of the show takes place with all of the interaction in the office. And then even newer shows like Stranger Things, it's about kids who live in the same town and go to the same school and ride bikes to each other's houses. And what draws people to these types of shows is that it's a picture, even if it's messed up and dysfunctional at times, it's a picture of what we really long for. Friends, friendships, relationships. One time you're talking about friendships, it gets very complex. Like, what is a friend? And how many friends can we have? Well, there's this anthropologist in the UK, Dunbar, who did fascinating research. It was so much fun to research this. He actually studied the size of brains in animals, and then he studied the size of brains in human beings. And after studying the size of brains, they determined the capacity of the brain to have connections and human connections. And then his team did research on 6 billion phone calls. And with all of this research and this brain science, discovered what we now call Dunbar's number, which says that we can have about 150 friendships. That's about the maximum amount of friendships that any one human being can handle. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Well, I've got 1,852 friends on Facebook, and I have 789 followers on Instagram. And obviously, you're not following me, Jason, because you don't see, and on and on and on. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about pseudo community. 150 relationships. But then what he discovered is that there are different tiers, 4 tiers in these relationships. And at the very top are what I'm calling authentic friendships, the most intimate friends, the Jonathan and David type relationships. And the average person can have no more than 5 really close, authentic, intimate friends. And many people will have just 1 or 2 in their life, but no more than 5. And then the next level, you have 10, those really good friends. And then 35, your primary friend circle, and then 100, your casual friends. And for those that don't know math, when you add that together, it's 150. That's Dunbar's numbers. And so I thought a lot about this in relation to friendships and how God has wired us. And I began to break it apart a little bit more. I thought, well, we have friendly people in our life. We have the person that you stand next to every week at the soccer game or at the cross country race or at the band competition, and you're talking and you're friendly and you're chatting about the Packers and the weather and life, and maybe you'll invite them over one time to watch a game or to have a barbecue together. Or that person that you see over and over again at work, and you begin to talk a little bit about life and what's going on. And so you decide periodically to connect. Or that once a year block party that some of you throw, and you're interacting finally with your neighborhoods, everybody comes out of the cave. Now that's part of the 100. And we all have dozens and dozens of people that we are friendly with. And some of that can actually overlap with our social media relationships. Well, then we have, and I think this is important, seasonal friendships. So let's get this off the table for a moment. Most of our friendships will be seasonal. And some of us are weighed down with guilt and shame because, well, I was such good friends with this person for this many years, but now I'm not anymore. And what's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with you. You're normal. Most friendships are seasonal. Even though Warren was my closest friend in high school, that still was a seasonal friendship. So whether it's a 5, a 10, a 35, or 100, we only can basically handle about 150. And so friends kind of come in and out of our life. We're good friends with someone in high school or in college or at that place of employment, or we're casual friends with them. And then we graduate high school and we switch jobs, or we switch churches, or we switch ministries. Oh, I went on that mission trip with that group and we became friends, but we're no longer together on that trip. And so we don't really hang out with them as much. That is normal. You are okay. Most of our friendships are seasonal. You have a period of time in which your kids are playing together. They're doing some of the same things, and now they grow up and your kids spread apart, and then you realize, hey, you begin to also distance yourself from those parents who were friends. That's okay. And so we go in and out of various kinds of friendships and relationships in our life. And most of our relationships are common experience based. So you like to watch the Packers, and I don't, therefore I'm not your friend. I like to watch the Packers. Or you like to go fishing, and I like to go fishing. Or you like to go on Pinterest, and I like going, we're being fictional here, and I like to go on Pinterest. Or you like, on and on and on, like they're experience-based, and we connect, they're affinity-based type relationships. You serve in the AV ministry, I serve in the AV ministry. You serve in the kids' ministry. I serve in the kids. You went on the men's retreat. I went on the men's retreat. Like those kind of things. But what I want us to really dig deep into is authentic friendships, that top five. I believe that God has created us to have at least one or two authentic friends. That, in fact, we need a couple of authentic friendships in our life. So what does it look like? What does it look like to have a Jonathan and David type relationship? And how can we step into that reality if it is, and I believe it is, a core need? Well, we have to say that some of us have been burned. And so right away, when we start talking about that top tier type friendship, an authentic friendship, a Jonathan and David type friendship, we start shutting down and freaking out because we had that type of relationship and that friend abandoned us. They stabbed us in the back. They wounded us. And so we're living in fear over this conversation and truly opening ourselves up to authentic relationships. See, one of the things I've realized is that almost all of us are on that side of the fence. Like we've been wounded by people who we thought were and actually were at times our authentic friends and were hurt. And so we create these walls. But the truth is the vast majority of us are also on the other side. We're the person who's wounded. I think many of us, we don't even realize that we're the person that's wounded, that's hurt that person. And so we stand on both sides of this reality of being the person who's been hurt and being the person that has hurt. And so we live in fear. But one of the great truths about the Christian story is that God does not intend us to be a people of fear, but of freedom. And one of the oppressive truths that has saturated and it's toxic to the community of faith in the church is that so many people are embracing Christianity, but they're embracing a Christianity of fear. And we're fear-driven when Christ has called us to experience freedom in him. And it's time to embrace the fullness and the wonder and the beauty and the power of the actual freedom that is possible in and through Jesus Christ. And so would you lean forward? Would you open yourselves up in the freedom of Christ to having an authentic Jonathan and David type relationship? Because we're created for those types of deep, intimate friendships. If we're gonna have that type of relationship, we have to assign priority to our relationships. The truth is that everything that I value, I prioritize. So if I value making money, I prioritize making money. If I value repainting the kitchen every 2.3 years, I repaint the kitchen every couple of years. If I value a nice lawn, then I'm out there working in the lawn. If I on and on, if I value vacations, I save for vacations and I plan for vacations. Like if I value education, then I'm going to school and continue going to school. Like whatever we really value, we prioritize in our life and we move things away so that we can do the things that we value. That's called prioritizing. So many of us actually don't have an authentic friendship simply because we haven't prioritized it. We have spent our life focusing in on so many other things, and then we're sitting alone with this ache, wondering, why don't I have a Jonathan and David type friendship? Why don't I have an authentic friend? Why don't I have at least one or maybe even two, let alone five? And in part, you just haven't prioritized it. So we begin by saying, this is a crucial God-given value, and I'm going to make space for an authentic friend. Which leads right to this idea that you can't fast forward it. You can't microwave friendships. There have been various authors that have influenced how I understand the Jonathan and David relationship and this whole concept of friendships and us and community from Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Life Together. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pastor. He was a theologian. He was a martyr in World War II. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in this little book, Life Together, talks about this idea of community and relationships. Like, you don't really have a true, authentic friendship and relationship and a tight community until you have faced the challenge, until you've been disappointed in the relationship. And then once you've been disappointed and hurt and wounded and you need to engage a forgiveness, and we're going to talk about that next weekend, well, then friendship, real community begins on the other side of the challenge. See, so many of us, as soon as it gets hard, as soon as someone disappoints us, as soon as we're wounded, like, we run. And we never experience the beauty of what we see in the Jonathan and David story. Or Swindoll and Ortberg and Crabb and Allender and Frazee and others who have shaped this understanding of community. Ortberg writes, the requirement for true intimacy is chunks of unhurried time. Chunks of unhurried time. You cannot fast forward authentic friendships. So if you're with someone and in like 3 days, you're like, this is my new authentic friend. Like, we hung out on a weekend together at a women's event, a men's event. We went hunting together. We did a shopping trip together. Now I have this new friend in 3 days. If that is someone that is kind of projecting that on you, run, unhealthy. You can't become Jonathan and David type friends in just a couple of days. Their relationship developed over time. You cannot celebrate with someone authentically in a hurry. You cannot mourn with someone. If you sat with someone and really mourned with them, they've lost a loved one, they've lost their job, they continue to battle severe addiction and they're just broken. You can't do that in a hurry. It takes time. You can't listen in a hurry. I've learned this in marriage. Like, I've tried. I've tried to listen to my wife in a hurry. I'm telling you, this is free for you married couples. It doesn't work. Now, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have Amy on stage, and we're going to talk about us. And she's so excited. And relationships and all of this in the context of something called the covenant. And the covenant is really crucial in the relationship with Jonathan and David, but we're going to talk about that in 2 weeks in this other aspect of us. So you just got to come back for that. But you can't listen in a hurry. Like, you can't fast forward authentic friendship. Authentic friends sacrifice for each other. Look back at 1 Samuel 20, verse 4. Jonathan said to David, whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you. That's amazing. Jonathan meant that, and he did it. There's this one time when his dad was going crazy, Saul the king, and he's angry at David. And David's not around, but Jonathan is there. And Saul, his own father, he throws a spear at his son because he's angry and wants to kill David. Like, literally, Jonathan would take a spear for David. He would do anything for him. Authentic friends sacrifice for each other. Years and years ago, when I was a youth pastor, Amy and I were newly married, we had a friend. And he was starting a business. And so he came to us and said, would you invest in my business? Because when you're starting a business, you want to talk to a youth pastor, because they make so much money. And so Amy and I were like, hey, this might be a great opportunity. It seems really good. So we gave him an enormous amount of money for our current financial position. I mean, it was like, whoa, should we do this? And so we gave this money to my friend. Well, he lost it all. He lost every dollar. He lost his money. Like, the business crashed and burned. But he wasn't just a lower tier friend. He was an authentic friend. He was a Jonathan and David type friend. And he paid us back. It was a tremendous sacrifice for himself and his family. He paid us back every single dollar that he lost first. That's an authentic friend. Authentic friends sacrifice for each other. Authentic friends are trustworthy. 1 Samuel 19, 4 through 5, Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul's father and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" And so David's not present. Like, it would have been so easy for Jonathan to be like, "All right, you know, dad, you know, maybe back off, chill out. No, but it's okay. I mean, I get why you're angry. I know you want me eventually to be the king. And I know David is a threat to you because you have such fragile ego." And I don't, like, he could have. And David, yeah, David does have some issues. I mean, he kind of has an eye for the ladies. That's going to be a problem, I think, maybe in the future. Not really sure. You know, and on and on and on. Like, Jonathan could have done that, but he didn't, because authentic friends are trustworthy. Authentic friends, they don't gossip about you behind your back. Like, they've got your back. And when you're not around and people are talking junk about you, like, authentic friends, they stand up for you. Long time ago, in a church far, far away, there were a small group of people that wanted to get me fired. Like, they wanted to remove me. And so they had secret meetings to try to get me out of here. And they invited one of my friends to come to that meeting, but my friend refused. And not only did my friend refuse to go to those meetings, but he always had my back and he stood with me. And he was trustworthy. I had no doubt that even when I wasn't around and other people were just attacking me, that he would stand up for me. That is an authentic friend, trustworthy. 1 Samuel 20, verse 41, authentic friends allow you to be you. I love this part. After the boy had gone, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed down before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground. Then he kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the most. Now, a couple of things to say about this. First, this has no sexual connotations whatsoever. In fact, when you study Jewish culture, what you discover is that kissing and embracing is part of the cultural dynamic. And you kiss the people that you have a relationship with and you're connected with. And it was a sign of commitment and respect. In fact, I grew up in a Italian family on the East Coast. We kissed everybody. When my wife, who is Dutch, growing up in the Midwest in the great city of Racine, Wisconsin, when she finally came to the Holy Land of New Jersey and met my family, like, there is Uncle George. Uncle George was huge. Like, he would sing like Pavarotti. Google it if you don't know who that is. And he would just, and Uncle George would just like swallow you in his hugeness and just kiss you. And she was just being kissed by all of these large, overweight Italian men. But it wasn't sexual at all. Anybody grow up in, anybody have a family like that? Like, you embrace, you hug. Like, there's like eight of us here. That's why it's Germantown, right? We got to clap more, a little more amens, right? Bring it. Come on, people. Wake up. Where was I? Authentic friends allow you to be you. So it's interesting. It seems like an afterthought, like, but David wept the most. David's an incredible person if you want to study someone in the Old Testament. Like, David was an athlete, if you would bring him today. Like, he'd be a star athlete because he was a warrior, right? You know, and David, if you brought him in today, he'd be the worship leader up front too. And he would be an artist. This guy had everything. He wrote some of the Psalms and poems. We sing songs today that lyrically are connected to what he wrote. He was this amazing guy. But obviously, even though he was a king and a warrior, as an artist, he was kind of emotional. But he wasn't afraid to show his emotion. If you're wondering, should I cry in front of this friend? Should I belly laugh in front of this friend? Should I let this friend see my anger and my frustration and my hurt? Then they're not an authentic friend. Because authentic friends can handle it. And I think about one of my friends. I can just be me around him. And there's times I'm so angry, I'm so frustrated, and I just let it out, and it just kind of oozes out because I'm wounded and I'm hurt and I'm disappointed. And he doesn't look at me and think, "You're a pastor? You're a Christian? What's your problem? I don't believe you said that you didn't even want to show up to church that day, but people would notice because you were preaching." True story. Right. As if all of you want to be here today. Right. We're on a journey, right? And there's times we just laugh. We've laughed so hard. We almost wet ourselves. Did you ever laugh that hard? Is that okay? Can I say that? It's just, you ever laugh that hard? You can't control yourself. But we're authentic. I can just be me. Do you have a friend like that? See, if you have to guard yourself, then they're not a Jonathan David type friendship. David wept the most. He knew that the end was coming. Eventually, Jonathan was going to die. Authentic friends encourage each other. 1 Samuel 23:17. "Don't be afraid," he said. "My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You'll be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this." Encouragement is such a gift. One of the things that we can offer as a community of faith that's just not out in the world is encouragement. The world wants to suck joy from our lives, wants to hold us down. The community of faith, the church, can be a place where we can truly lift each other up, when we can encourage each other. And authentic friends do this. It's a gift that you can offer another. One of my friends is so good at this. He tells me what I need to hear. Sometimes it's actually a hard word of encouragement. But I trust him and he trusts me. And we speak into each other's life. And when I'm all down, he knows how to encourage me. And I know he's not blowing smoke. It's just a timely word for my life. Authentic friends encourage each other. And authentic friends draw you closer to Jesus. 1 Samuel 23:16, "And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Harosh and helped him find strength in God." Because of Jonathan and David's relationship and their mutual love for the Jehovah Yahweh creator God, when they were around each other, they were a mutual catalyst for them to love God more. If you have a really close friend, but they are not a catalyst in your life to love Jesus more, they're not a top-tier authentic friend. Because authentic friends, when you're around them, they're like, "Hey, how are you doing in your walk with Christ?" And they're an example to you, and you're an example to them. Authentic friends help us to love Jesus more. And at the top of my list, number one, has been my wife, Amy, as my authentic friend. Because I've been married to her for a couple of decades, I love Jesus more. And we'll talk more about that later in a few weeks. But then there's also Greg. Greg was a man who I met every single Friday for lunch for 6 years straight. He took an hour of his lunch from the business he worked at, and we sat together and we talked about life and family and children and ministry and theology and Bible and temptation and Jesus. And because of my friendship with Greg years and years ago as a young pastor, I love Jesus more today. And I'm the man I am today, in part because of Greg and my wife, Amy. Authentic friends cause us to love Jesus more. So do you have an authentic friend? Do you have at least one? Most people have one, two, maybe three in their life. A Jonathan and David type relationship. If you don't, I want to challenge you to begin in prayer. If you don't, would you pray this prayer? God, bring me an authentic friend. God, I know I'm wired for that. I need that. Bring me an authentic friend, a Jonathan and David type friend. Start with prayer. But there's a second part of the prayer. Don't miss this. Not just bring me an authentic friend, but God, make me an authentic friend. Make me an authentic friend. See, if we don't want to be an authentic friend to someone, we're not going to attract an authentic friend. So we're praying. That's where we're starting. God, bring me an authentic friend. Make me an authentic friend. And then prioritize it. Like if you're just sitting, binging Netflix, watching YouTube, playing Fortnite, if all you're doing is isolating yourself alone in the basement, you're not going to have an authentic friend. That means you have to invite people over your house or your apartment, have people over for the games, have someone over for a barbecue, get in a grow group, go to the men's weekend, go to the women's journey event, serve in kids and students in AV ministry and the Woodlands ministry, go on the Living Hope Mexico mission trip. Like you have to prioritize it. You're going to have to make room for it. So we're praying, God, bring me an authentic friend, make me an authentic friend. And then we are putting ourselves in a situation where we can meet some people. Now, what's going to happen is there's going to be people you meet and you're going to think for a while, this might be an authentic friend and I want them to be an authentic friend. And then after several months or maybe even years, you're going to realize it's not an authentic friend. That's okay. That's normal. Don't give up. Become an authentic friend to attract authentic friends. Prioritize it. Be patient. It takes time. But I believe that God has a Jonathan and David relationship for every single one of us because we're created for community. We're created for us. Let's pray. Father God, we love you so much. You're a good and great God. And Lord, I do pray that for those of us who are sitting here and we're like, I have this ache, this relational ache, and I don't know if I have a friend like Jonathan and David. Lord, I pray that today would be the catalyst, today would be the beginning for them to step into the beauty and the wonder of the type of relationships that you have called us to. God, I pray that every single one of us would be an authentic friend and have an authentic friend. Thank you for creating us for you and for each other. In Jesus' name, amen.